February 19th, 2025 brings us Xbox AI game models, PS5 news from software, on Dark Souls, Valve and Amazon, and GameStop has some things to say. Anyway, we're going to get into it all and more here on Super Game Cast Daily, your source for video game and video game industry news. My name is Aaron. I'm joined by
Duncan. My name is Duncan.
Yo, what's up?
That's me. Video games are up.
Are they?
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, they're up.
They're more than up. They're so up. I was sitting here just
this
morning.
I'm big up on video games lately, you know. I'm just big up on it.
Video games are pretty cool. I don't know what you're thinking, but yeah, I'm thinking video games are pretty cool. Including some of these news stories. I thought it was going to be a slow news day, and then I just kept digging. I was like, wow, what is going on out here? Stuff. Let me tell you, there is some stuff going on. So let's go ahead and get into this one, which caught me by surprise. Xbox has built an AI model that can generate video game visuals and actions. So what they did is they had a couple studios work on this generative AI model. They used the game Bleeding Edge to train their AI, or at least the footage that they used for their tests. And they would take 10 frames to simulate 1 second of gameplay and then let the AI model go and try to simulate the rest of the game, apparently.
So it seems like the concept here is an AI model that would take a game, footage of it, and then just replicate the game in a near playable fashion.
Right. This is potentially wild if you leave it to just your thoughts and imaginations. But when it comes to AI, you should not do that. Don't do that. But there is some interesting stuff happening here. Maybe they've released the code for developers to take a look at on a website that I do not have in front of me at this moment. But if you search for this story, you will find it. And the idea is to create an AI model that will help game developers with building and maintaining their video games.
Yeah, and this is obviously, given that it's published in Nature, some evidently cutting edge, AI research.
Yes.
And it's interesting because, you know, obviously AI is getting so much more unbelievably powerful mm-hmm. by the month.
Yep.
And this is a great example of AI doing things that we didn't believe it to be capable of within the time frame that it is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's not a magic bullet. People have you mentioned another article that people have discussed things like a game being recreated that is no longer accessible just from visuals of footage from the game. The concept that comes to mind for me here is that there was an ARG that had a game in it that was only accessible by the guy running the ARG, right? It's not actually a real game. It's called Petscop.
Okay.
It is a game. It is a real game. He said it was for the PS1, but it obviously is not. He made it and of course never released it because it was just meant to provide visuals for an ARG that he was running. That was like a YouTube Let's Play of a game that doesn't exist.
Wow.
And you could theoretically take a model like this, take the footage of the game that doesn't exist and recreate a playable version of Petscop that is accessible to the public.
Oh, that's terrifying. Okay.
Huh. Yeah. And that's fascinating, but I think that's also an example of how this isn't necessarily as useful for game preservation as one might believe. It would obviously be useful for game preservation in the situation where you have a game where literally every single part of the game is recorded. Like, there's a complete footage base of the game. If you could then recreate a version of it that can, you know, if you can use an AI that can generate game visuals and controller actions with complete footage of a game, then it's not missing any information, and you could reasonably completely recreate a Ninja Gaiden, for example, on the NES or on the SNES.
Yes.
But for recreating something like a Petscop or even a Halo 1, there's Easter eggs in that game. There's little details that that the AI can't invent information. AI only functions as a prediction of what previous information is implicative of, which means if something is not implied by existing data, it can't be generated. You can't predict a random incorrect pixel on a texture, because why would that ever be there? Nothing about the previous data implies that. And, you know, that, that a lot of games have that, and that's a lot of the charm of games. And something like this could never really accomplish that.
There is a possibility, though, if they develop this far enough, they use this in tandem with other generative AI, and they take, if they were to get like a full recreation of something, and then they use the other generative AI to make new things from the things that were established, and that's a whole other beast.
That's certainly something that we will probably sometime within the next 10 to 20 years be dealing with, is generative AI just continuing ended content. And there's a whole thing to that. You know, it goes into the discussion of the efficacy of the morality of AI art, and then also the quality of AI art.
Right.
It's a far off discussion, not as far off as I'd like it to be, but far off discussion as to what it's going to be like when we can just ask for more game from AI model.
Think about like the idea of game development, or really just media art, where you have an AI model that serves at your whim, and so what you do is you create a world and you create the rules, and then you may have like some characters and stories set up, but you have to account, you have to be like the ultimate dungeon master and like really build out everything to really carry out your vision in this. And then you just play infinite versions of that.
And hardcore AI believers, the true believers that believe the technological singularity is coming, that's the sort of condition of like society that they are kind of predicting, is that eventually media in general will be made by curators of prompts rather than people with art creation skills, is the idea. People who are defining conditions for the creation of a piece of art and then getting the result of that art without the actual creative process that goes into that, which is a little dystopian to me.
The one of the greatest purpose of art in my mind is about sharing perspective between humans, because we are not the Borg. We don't have a direct connection to each other, and art is this way to share experiences, whether it be history or just like how we feel emotionally in certain situations. And video games, while they're about fun and entertainment, like there's certainly that as well. And I worry that going down this path is just like, it's an infinite entertainment box, just jump in.
In my opinion, when it comes to whether or not something is art, to me the suffering is the art. I would point to a YouTube series by a YouTuber called Limpwort. He plays RuneScape. This is his entire YouTube channel. He's a RuneScape YouTuber.
It's already
of
suffering.
Which there are many.
Of which.
His concept is that he's something called an extreme one-chunk Iron Man. So RuneScape can be similar to something like Minecraft, divided into chunks. And he must complete all things within a chunk before he is allowed to randomly roll another chunk to enter to complete all things within, and so on and so forth, until he's ideally made a normal character in the game who's just unlocked everything. Now, this is psychotic.
Yes.
Because RuneScape takes an unreasonably long amount of time to complete in normal circumstances, disregarding the fact that at the very beginning of the game is the max out your defense stat cape that he has to get, which took him about 2,000 hours of punching level 1 men. That's how the series started. He then eventually ended up in a prison like hell, where he had to capture imps for about 3,500 hours in what is probably the worst minigame in RuneScape. That is art. That is art because the man has suffered in a unique and profound fashion, only for our entertainment.
I think there is something to be gleaned from such suffering. I think witnessing perseverance in the face of such suffering, it's a way to learn about a certain aspect of the human condition is through such suffering.
and there is an essence by which you can determine all art to be a result of a suffering of labor.
Sure.
Whether it be well directed or unwell directed, you know, something can come out better or worse, regardless of the amount of labor put into it. But the labor itself could be described as a suffering, one that you can come to enjoy, but nonetheless a loss in your time and your life dedicated to the creation of a thing, something that AI simply cannot do by nature of not being a guy who will have a bad time for missing on something he could have otherwise done instead of creating the thing it's creating.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So yeah, we got this happening. We'll see. We're going to get some video, I guess, soon of how this thing works. I don't know. One thing I do know is I hope that what we were talking about earlier before the show, it would be great if people started doing playthroughs of their games, let's plays, but it's them experiencing every single aspect of a video game solely that they can be the video that they train the AI on, and that's how the game is made.
Yeah, a version of game preservation that is effectively footage of everything in the video game leading up to it being permanently preserved via an AI model being able to recreate the ability to control that footage. Yeah. And view every screen. That would be incredible. I would love that. And I think it's a realistic technology to come into existence within the next 10 or 20 years.
Especially if they're not going to, you know, get all these PS3 games back, you know?
Yeah.
You got to figure something out.
isn't there some like crazy statistic that like the vast majority now of all games that have ever come out will not be preserved in the long run?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's wild.
Yeah, it's so. We'll see what happens with this. That's kind of their primary selling point for end users right now for that AI technology. So we'll see. Anyway, yeah. We got some more Shuhei Yoshida. He is out here doing interviews. Let me tell you.
And he feeds us more news. He feeds us the news. And we are hungry little news goblins.
don't I know it? One of the things he said, Japan Studio, beloved Japan Studio, brought us a number of games. It closed because the AA market has disappeared. So this is just saying, hey, you know, people who made Ape Escape, people who made, you know, Gravity Rush, people who make these games that aren't the biggest of big but aren't the smallest of small, there's just not a space for them anymore. And
there's no longer room for the middle scope. You need small or large.
Right. Yes. For example, down here towards the bottom, Yoshida cites the upcoming Patapon spiritual sequel, Ratatan. Would have been, you know, that Patapon would have been in that space. And now it's a game that gets crowdfunded on Kickstarter.
Yeah. And, you know, we had a story last week describing that there's rumors of Patapon possibly coming back, and I feel like he's effectively saying, no guys, it isn't. I was there.
It's like, if it is, it's coming from like five of y'all working together. That's where it's coming from. Yeah, which
yeah, it's a shame. There's a lot of great games that have come out of the, you know, not crazy big, but also not small at all type of development, you know, style, I feel, that comes from a lot of subsidiaries of these major developers like EA and Ubisoft and Sony. There's just no way that's happening anymore. I mean, EA and Ubisoft certainly aren't doing it. Sony has stopped doing it. you might be able to convince a Microsoft and then just to be on Game Pass, and they're probably going to shut you down for no reason because you made Hi-Fi Rush.
You made X amount of profits. We're going to keep those figures secret, and then we're going to shut your studio down.
And then we're going to work on porting your game to other consoles because it's actually really good and people like it.
And we're going to do press conferences where we say, we need more games like that.
Yeah, we need more Hi-Fi Rushes. Weird. Not more studio that made Hi-Fi Rush, though.
Oh, it's wild, man. And so, like, and this goes back to, it's not that these games can't make a profit. It's that they're not going to make enough of a profit.
Yeah, and it's a... Yeah, because you have to make 10% over your investment within any given year. Mm-hmm. So year over year, which means not only do you have to make 10% over your investment, if you took 5 years to develop your game, you have to make 10% compounding over the initial investment that was put into that game, which is rough. That's a lot of money you need to make.
If you succeed, then like you have to keep going.
I mean, think about it. Think about GTA 6, right? Mm-hmm. GTA 6 has, a $2 billion development budget. Mm-hmm. And it's taken, over a decade, right? When did GTA 5 come out again?
It came out, 2013? I forget. But
So it's been 12 years. You have to make 10% compounding off of $2 billion in profit. Which means you're making, in the order of billions of dollars in profit that you're going to have to make over a 12-year period. That's crazy. That's nuts. That's a lot of money.
It's why we had that news story earlier where GTA is considering creating a Roblox-like marketplace where you can create stuff in the game and then both of y'all get a cut. Of the money.
And I feel like a soothsayer because of that story, because the week prior I had said that everyone wants to be a Fortnite. Everyone wants to be a Fortnite. We were talking about GTA 6, said everybody wants to be a Fortnite, mm-hmm. except for Fortnite, which wants to be a Roblox. And then GTA 6 said, hey, let's actually skip that step then of becoming a Fortnite and let's go straight to being a Roblox.
Right.
Which is a really good idea for them.
Yes.
If they can follow up on their promises of making a viable creation kit, mm-hmm. which I doubt, because a lot of companies have talked about being, we're going to release fantastic modding tools and there's going to be a great creation kit. And you just don't see that actually happening as much as people say they're going to do it.
And this is a franchise that has not done well in adapting their GTA to PCs. So...
Absolutely. It's still going to have a delayed release, if I recall. GTA 6 is going to be delayed from console to PC. And the ability to develop secondary games within the game is a lot harder when you don't have a PC client.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to want to get the PC version out, I would think, as quickly as possible because of what that role-playing scene does for GTA. Obviously, that game is super popular at all times.
It makes so much money with the role-playing scene. It's huge.
Yeah, yeah. And they bought one of the modding groups that was helping make that happen. And so they're incorporating all of that. And you're part of this now. We're going to make this happen.
New stories have come out about how they're even structuring GTA 6 specifically in mind, with that community having more tools available to them to make a more robust version of their roleplay engine.
It's a very good call. It is a very good call. Yeah. To bring this back to the original story, it's a bummer that we've lost the AA game. I think there's some beautiful stuff going on with that side of game. And we talk about how game development costs are ballooning out of control to the point where people are struggling to break even as they sell millions of copies, and it's getting worse. For the purposes of making something that is just regular profitable, like normal people profitable, the AA game is a fantastic place to invest in, just getting people to make cool games in a relatively short amount of time compared to what we have now. It's just try to tell that to investors.
Yeah. It sucks. It sucks. But the economic conditions, we are all slaves to them.
We are locked in, my friend. I hope yep. Adam Boys and his games consultancy group, tries to come up with something a little more positive, a little more constructive in that realm. He knows that realm very well. And like he said, it's like, that's just not going to change. That's the only thing that could change is that players just all of a sudden at once in mass choose to support and fund indie games, like 80% of their games that they play. Like,
and even then, corporations do not interpret willful actions towards influencing their behavior the way that we would wish they would interpret those.
Right.
Right. If a game is unsuccessful because it has a lot of microtransactions in it, and people, Star Wars Battlefront 2 being, the modern version being a great example, that the initial launch was unsuccessful due to a massive backlash against major amounts of microtransactions present. Mm-hmm. That company is not going to interpret that as microtransactions being bad business strategy.
Right.
They're going to interpret that as this game of this type is bad for some reason.
Yep.
They don't have individuals amongst the corporate of a given company might come to that understanding. But the fact of the matter is that corporations are conglomerated minds of a mass of people, and they do not have the decision-making capacity to come to nuanced conclusions about consumer decisions, which means that when consumers, even banded together, make nuanced decisions about their consumption habits because of stanced positions about what they believe is good or bad, the company cannot think on that level because they are not a person with a brain. They are a conglomeration of brains making decisions bound by fiduciary responsibilities.
Which is why I think moving to mostly indie would still benefit you anyway. You just have to like know that it's not coming back. Like I
certainly did it a while ago.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But no, we're trapped here for now. And yeah. I don't know. We have our hopes of consoles becoming a little bit more affordable by becoming like partially portable as an option. Yeah. You know, that's an
That'd
idea.
Be great.
And the limitations of technology that you can fit into such a thing may mean you limit, you know, having to push everything. Maybe, you know, so I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. That's at least, you know, a couple years off. Like Switch 2 is going to be released, and then you got the ROG Ally and the Steam Deck. Xbox is still pretty mum on what it's doing. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, and we're just waiting for the sequel to the Steam Deck, the Steam Dick, to come out and really microtize games and give us all access, hopefully for cheaper than a Steam Deck.
Yes. And we hope it's good because it's Valve, so there won't be a third. Aha!
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of Shuhei Yoshida, though.
Yes.
Our next story is another bit of yummy Shuhei juice we've been given from his recent podcast appearances. He said that From Software didn't want Sony to publish Dark Souls as it was, quote, disappointed by how Demon Souls was treated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we mentioned a news story just recently about how this all went awry, and just there was just no faith in Demon Souls, which, to be fair, at the time it was a bit of a weird thing. Didn't make it unpopular. Yeah. I bought it full price. I hate Souls games, but when this thing came out, I was like, this is crazy.
Of the original release of Demon Souls, which is what this is mostly about,
yes,
is that it was weirdly unsuccessful. It didn't like lose money, mm-hmm. but that like Demon Souls came out to like weirdly low reviews and not as much popularity in the West as one would have wanted to warrant a sequel, but it was successful in Japan.
Right.
And that inspired, you know, a sequel in Dark Souls, but they looked to not be working directly with Sony because they really believed in the format, and then Dark Souls came out, and Dark Souls 1 was huge, even though it was the same game, kind of. Like, it's the same kind of deal. Yeah. I think Dark Souls 1 is much better than Demon's Souls, but it's, like, not wildly dissimilar. I think its format is also much better. There's a lot. There's obviously a lot to talk about in the differences between Demon's Souls and Dark Souls, but fundamentally, the Souls like play gameplay came in Demon's Souls, Dark Souls 1 being such a hit was a crazy surprise that I feel like couldn't have been easily predicted. And it sucks for Sony because if they did predict it, they would have had a way better exclusive, but they kind of turned From Software off with being rude about Demon's Souls' release in the West.
when Demon's Souls came out, it was a weird game. I was attracted to it because there just wasn't another game out there, especially, you know, in that main console space that was like it. And because it was a weird thing, I think just the market as a whole took a long time to get accustomed to what it was trying to do. When Dark Souls 1 came out, it's like, oh, all right, there's an audience here. Fantastic.
Yeah, its vibe was just so different from everything else available during its release window.
Wild.
And its gameplay it's not as though its gameplay doesn't have roots, right? It obviously has origins.
Yes.
Origins going all the way back to Ocarina of Time, if you were to really trace back the inspirations that led to the birth of Demon's Souls. But I think that combination at that pace was just like what people believed gamers didn't want, right? That sort of slow and deliberate form of combat in an ARPG was like, I mean, not an ARPG as we currently call it, but, you know, it's an action game.
It is.
And no one was doing that. And so its weird performance, I think, was to Sony reinforcing that this is, as they thought, not what gamers want right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, gamers you spoke of includes Yoshida, who, quote, "For my personal experience with Demon's Souls, when it was close to final, I spent close to 2 hours playing it, and after 2 hours, I was still standing at the beginning of the game. I said, this is crap. This is an unbelievably bad game, so I put it aside." I'll be honest. I had the similar experience, although I'm bad at the game. But holy crap, this 50-foot-tall knight stomped on me, and 2 hours later, I haven't made it anywhere.
Yeah, I was introduced to the series of Dark Souls 1, and I had this experience where I knew it was popular and that people liked it. Mm-hmm. I was also in middle school.
Right.
And so I purchased the game with my meager funds, and I tried to play it, and then I got to the Belfry Gargoyles. And they were just insane for me. Mm-hmm. Like, the gargoyles were way too difficult, and it just completely stonewalled me. I couldn't get past them, and therefore couldn't play the game. And I bounced completely off of it. And then years later, I think I was like 17 or 18. I was like, try that game again, and then fell in love immediately. I love Dark Souls.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of people love Dark Souls now, and so we're thankful that that happened the way it did. And then Sony finally got a crack at it, got Bloodborne, which many would say is the best or their favorite of the entire series, which I find this whole story...
Honestly, I think Elden Ring's the best. I love Elden Ring.
Well, Elden Ring's
cool. It was just really good.
Yeah.
I feel like there's an impulse to be contrarian, and Bloodborne is the obvious contrarian beacon here. Bloodborne's obviously amazing. I would call it their second best game, maybe third. It's kind of back and forth between Dark Souls 3 and Bloodborne for me. It's so different from the other games in the series. The major contrarian position, though, is that Sekiro is the best one by far. Yeah. I have a buddy who strongly believes that. But there's just so much in Elden Ring. There's just so much. There's so much, and it's I like it. I like it, and I like how it is, and I like that world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess it's a prequel to Dark Souls 3 now.
What?
Yeah, so have you seen stuff from the Elden Ring Night Rain network test? So people have now played Elden Ring Night Rain, and there's a bunch of footage out there of it. And one of the playable characters, because you have to select a character, is the Firekeeper from Dark Souls 3.
Yeah, sure.
And in the trailer for Elden Ring Night Rain, when they first announced it, the Nameless King from Dark Souls 3 is just in it. Not like a guy that looks like him. It's definitely exactly him with the exact same dragon.
So I got filtered by this series a while ago, so I don't keep yeah. tabs on it. Is this not... What are the chances they're just taking recognizable characters from all of these and just throwing them in a game?
Well, From Software has always made fantastic use of reusing assets. They love reusing assets. So all of these games are in the same engine. I think Elden Ring might even... No, Elden Ring's in the Dark Souls 3 engine. And I think they made a new engine for Dark Souls 3, but everything up to Bloodborne is in the Dark Souls 1 engine, and they've just really, really stretched their capabilities with their assets, because there are assets in Elden Ring that are also in Dark Souls 1.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah, so they quite infamously do that, and I think that this might be a move of adjusting the lore to allow them to use the assets from Dark Souls 3 for making a game more cheaply and more quickly, which I'm all for. But Dark Souls 3, it would have to be a prequel to Dark Souls 3. Dark Souls 3, it's fundamentally the themes of Dark Souls 3 is about it being the last game in the series, and there will never, ever, ever, ever be anything chronologically after it.
Wow.
Dark Souls 3's, like, latest point in its chronology is the entire world has gone through so many cycles of death and rebirth that every single thing has been burned to the most fundamental ash possible, and the entire world is barren and incapable of ever hosting anything again, as it has been heat deathed down to its most base components.
Hell yeah.
And there is not but rubble and dust.
Yeah. That's good shit.
And the last thing that ever happens ever is two people fighting for no reason in a field who are nobody because nothing is left. And it's the most hype and amazing shit ever.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
The ending to the Ringed City DLC in Dark Souls 3 is some peak video game of all time content. And so obviously Elden Ring, if it is in the Dark Souls chronology,
yeah.
has to take place between Dark Souls 2 and 3, or potentially between Dark Souls 1 and 3. Probably Dark Souls 2 and 3, which is interesting that they're doing this. It's just weird, but there's evidently room for it. Dark Souls 2 establishes that there are infinite cycles of death and rebirth where the original characters from Dark Souls 1 are being remade as new people, and new things will happen, and new worlds and kingdoms will be born from the ashes of the prior. So there's room in the lore for an Elden Ring to just exist in the middle of that.
Why not?
They might do that. Or they could just put that all in there and never explain it, which they're pretty likely to do.
And then you'll get 3-hour lore videos off of what they just threw stuff in, and then they see that and it's like, oh, we could incorporate some of that.
Yeah, it could effectively just be fan service where they're going, yeah, you know, he looks the same, and they have a lot of similar themes, and here's a Vatty Vidya video about why they aren't the same character or why they might be. And what it all means. You know, pretty infamously, they're really hands-off about what is actually true in their setting.
Mm.
And so there will never properly be an answer as to whether or not Elden Ring is in the Dark Souls chronology, almost certainly.
They don't gain anything from confirming that. Let that be speculation. Let the fans go wild.
No, in fact, they really want you to just talk about whether or not it is yeah. probably what this is.
People love it. People love it. Just do it. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And it's funny to think that Shuhei Yoshida is directly involved in Sony not having this mega franchise now at this point as part of its exclusive library, as it was absolutely poised to be.
It was.
If things went well with Demon's Souls.
This is actually more of a, this feels more like a Microsoft level kind of fumble on an IP. But
yeah,
it was a weird thing at the time in terms of difficulty. It was like Ninja Gaiden was happening somewhere, was around that time. And then like the games before this were like King's Field, right? And so, you know, it just.
Which weirdly, King's Field doesn't play dissimilarly.
No.
In its nature from the Soul series.
Right.
There's a great game I've been playing recently called Fly Knight that is evidently a massively inspired by the Kingsfield game, games game. And like the immediate comparison everyone makes is that this is Dark Souls, but first person and with flies.
Yeah.
You know, it's a, like Kingsfield kind of does feel like a Soulsy like pace of combat series. And that's evidently what they were trying to move into a 3D space. It's like, you know, they got inspired by action RPGs like Devil May Cry and stuff, but they wanted to slow it down to the pace of their existing series. It's fascinating. It's so fascinating, the development process behind such a massive series.
Right, yes. And such a unique one, too. Just inspired a whole genre. The big thing about this story that I love is how they fumbled it. They got a chance with Bloodborne, and now they won't do shit with Bloodborne.
Yeah, it's like, 'cause they've also kind of fumbled on Bloodborne because they just refuse to touch it again.
Yep. Put it out at 60 frames. I don't know if you can do that. Hey, I hear Xbox is working on some generative AI. Maybe it'll help you. I don't know, man.
No, but here's a fashion crossover where you can buy official Bloodborne boots for $300.
Ooh. How much can
I... To be fair, they're great-looking boots.
I believe it. And unfortunately, shoe prices these days, $300 is not unheard of.
Not unheard of. It's actually not crazy for, like, super well-made shoes.
Yeah. You'll have to link that to me later.
Promotion's over. Shit. You can buy them secondhand only.
Oh, and those got to skyrocket in price after that.
They were also only sold on a Japanese website.
Boo. First I missed the life-size Gardevoir, and now this, I'm behind. Right?
You don't want to buy a life-size Gardevoir on the secondary market, I'll tell you that.
No, you don't. all right, let's move on. Hey, so an interesting story came out. I saw this on PC Gamer here.
Pika Gamer.
Amazon's Prime Gaming former VP put out a LinkedIn post. It's this long post. Actually, I'm going to click over it right now. It's this long post explaining what they were trying to do. They were trying to disrupt Steam. That was the idea. And according to their numbers, they were 250 times bigger, I'm guessing, in terms of profit or just, I don't know, comprehensively. And they did this for, according to him, over 15 years. That was the goal. Was over 15 years, they were trying to figure out how to disrupt Steam. And they failed. I don't have to tell you that. You, Duncan, or you, the listener, or you, the viewer. I don't have to tell you that. They failed. And so, you know,
another VP openly says it.
Yes.
Which is uncommon.
Yes. So it was actually like pretty constructive. He's just like, this is how we failed. This is why. And it's, you know, it's very corporate speak, but it's like constructive. And I appreciate opening up about this. And so the PC Gamer article is opinionated, to say the least.
It's a great article.
It's a good article.
I very much liked it. I highly recommend anyone to read it if you want more details. But the overall idea is that, you know, it's just very obvious to anyone watching as to why Amazon wasn't able to disrupt Steam. And that's on account of the fact that they provided a less convenient product.
Yes.
And it had less of the ecosystem that enabled Steam to be so popular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Steam has basically every game on it that you're looking for. If you're looking for any indies, they're going to be on Steam. That's where they need to be to matter. They're, you know, they're the platform that games are on, which means you have to break into that in the first place, which is itself very difficult. But then secondarily, Steam is convenient to use.
Yeah.
You don't have to link it with anything or pay any subscription service, which you don't have to use for Amazon's gaming platform either. But, you know, it just it had fewer things on it. It wasn't convenient to access. It wasn't as functional. And then Steam, as he mentions in the article, it has built-in social media features. How many games do we play multiplayer through Steam with?
Right.
Right. Steam connectivity is a huge part of the multiplayer ecosystem inside video games, which you have to make an equally convenient version of for your game. And you need to be able to play with the people you were going to play with anyways, which if they're on Steam and you're not cross-functional with joining people in Steam, that's going to suck. And Steam is not going to voluntarily allow you to just be like, yeah, you can just join game on people who are playing in Steam. That functionality is never going to happen. And then achievements. Steam has an achievement system, as every as Xbox and PlayStation have their version of achievements and trophies, Steam has their version, making them the de facto library of your accomplishments for the PC space. And that's just so much to break into, to break their monopoly. You'd have to be giving such a massive value proposition. And I think the only way to do that is kind of what Epic Games has done in the Epic Store, which is terrible and nobody wants to use, has almost all of its users, I would say, from exclusives and free games.
Free games, yep.
Free games, just a ton of free games. And Amazon thought that dumping money in would be their solution, and then they very, very stupidly dumped their money into Luna, which you probably haven't heard about, like, people out there.
Nope.
Luna was like a giga failure of all failures. Most people heard about Luna when hearing about it failing.
And it's what is Luna? It is a Stadia. What is a Stadia?
It was a Stadia that was releasing when Stadia was failing.
Yep.
When the proof of concept was proving the lack of concept, they were hopping in with a ton of money.
Yep.
And, you know, they mentioned that, you know, they're 250 times as large as Valve when it comes to their financial resources. And if you're not putting that into, for one, replicating every single point of functionality that Steam has and then adding a value proposition on top of it, there's absolutely no reason to use your platform.
And on, to top all that off, Steam and Valve have a reputation of, especially compared to other corporations in that space, of being people first. Which is valuable.
Steam is the most consumer-friendly company in the video game space, I'd say by far.
Yeah.
When it comes to major companies that actually are the king makers of video games right now, Valve is just the most friendly to consumers that exists, and that is hard to replicate. And Amazon's certainly not going to replicate it. Now, one thing Amazon had going for it is that it was apparently very good to its workers, and they paid talented people well to make games and to do work, but it's not enough if your platform doesn't have everything Steam has and more.
When you are trying to disrupt a market, you better be finding a weakness in the king, in the person leading.
Yeah, and you know what Steam's real weaknesses, what these other platforms could do. More gambling and more unregulated markets. I think that if they really want to become a competitor to Steam, they need to enable you to just bankrupt yourself on their platforms.
So that, I feel like, do you remember like Twitch had, there was a chance that it was going to get disrupted by Kick, and then Kick didn't happen.
So, okay. For one thing, Kick absolutely is still around and huge.
Yes.
And the reason it's still around and huge is because they can afford to lose insane amounts of money, paying hundreds of millions of dollars to gigantic streamers. You know, some of the most popular streamers in the world stream exclusively on Kick. And they do that because they're being paid $150 million plus contracts.
Yes.
And they can do that because they're promoting gambling.
Yep.
Because Kick is run by Stake. Stake is the largest online gambling platform for crypto that exists. And gambling makes an insane amount of money.
Yeah.
It makes so much money that Steam is engaging in it. They just realize how evil it is. It feels like they get how evil this is.
This maybe goes back to, yeah, their Steam is not willing to go into that space.
They just, it's so much money, they couldn't stop themselves from going into the space of gambling. You know, CSGO crates, loot crates, they're gambling. Like, loot boxes in general are like, yeah, that's gambling, but converting it into an actual financial asset is near impossible. Except for with like CSGO, where it's really, really easy to convert into a financial asset. You can go buy a $14,000 knife right now. I think the most expensive trade of an individual skin for a Counter-Strike skin was like $3.2 million or something.
Are we money laundering? What is happening?
Yeah, it's just this wild, wild amount of gambling going on in Counter-Strike. People who do not play Counter-Strike gamble Counter-Strike skins. It's such a thing. And there's also a massive unregulated stock market in Team Fortress 2. In Counter-Strike, the gambling is connected to an unregulated stock market, and in Steam trading cards.
Oh yeah, the cards and the, yeah, yep.
That's also an unregulated stock market.
Well, all I ever get are fucking 2 cent cards, so I just don't pay attention.
Yeah, you don't notice it because you don't engage with it, but the people who do engage with it,
there's
are
something there, huh?
They're gambling.
Okay,
they're stock gambling, the other variety of gambling. They won't stop because it's putting tens of millions of dollars on, it's just setting tens of million dollars on fire to stop doing it. And because people who are doing it will be mad at them. So the only thing they will get is some like kudos from people who understand that it's morally wrong that they're doing it. And then a bunch of pissed off people in the player base that is like huge, like a huge part of the Counter-Strike community would actually be hugely pissed if they couldn't open crates because they love the Gamba.
Right.
It's so fun.
So a perfect time is like set up the infrastructure for Steam, but gambling, and then wait for Steam to try and put some sort of ceiling on it.
Yeah. The real disruptor is by setting up an exact copy of Steam, but you just really turn up the amount of unregulated gambling.
Turn that knob. Oh, boy.
And you promote the shit out of it. I mean, like, you go on your front page or your store page, and there is a fucking slot machine right there on the left that gives you, like, fun bucks points or, like, you know, just something. You're getting cards, you're getting little collectibles that pop out of the literal slot machine on your store page. It's one click purchases. And then they're making just hundreds of millions of dollars off of this. Jesus. And then you can compete with Steam.
Oh, that's a terrifying nightmare. We have I pulled this story up to talk about, man, Steam and Valve, but we have now twice gone into dystopian video game nightmares. All right. Well,
we live in the dystopian video game reality.
That's why we pull up this theme. That's why Super Gamecraft has this new theme, is we've recognized that in just working, you know, just game development and that business. But now, but then there's also the consumer end too. And we can see how that might end up. Hopefully no one high up saw this video. So we got two new stories. We're gonna go through these real quick. I know one of these you were bursting at the seams to talk about. We're gonna get into what we can.
I didn't even realize what time it was too.
I know. We've been going. We got some good stories.
We got some good stories.
So speaking of Valve and Steam and cool people, Valve released full client and server game code for Team Fortress 2.
Yeah, I say this is another reason why Valve is kind of on top in player friendliness, is that, you know, this is awesome. It's
huge.
You know, Source is already used to make video games, and they've just released every single thing that made Team Fortress 2 into Source, so you have access to all of those assets and all of that programming now, and that's just a huge opportunity for people to make games and make cool things, and especially to just mod Team Fortress 2.
Right. Yeah.
Which is already apparently not that hard to do. I mean, you can hop into Team Fortress 2 and play Team Fortress 2 cart. Like, that's absolutely a thing.
Right. Now, you can't sell anything because you have access to, like, Steam Workshop, and what they write is they don't, you know, want people profiting off of the creations of other people who have put creations into the Steam Workshop. You can make games with this, and then you can put them out on the Steam store, and it will appear as a new game in the Steam game list. So
yeah,
I wonder what curation.
Importantly, the reason they don't want people making money off of this is because they don't want people making money off of the assets that were made by the community for Team Fortress 2. Most of the weapons and hats and collectibles, the unregulated stock market inside of Team Fortress 2,
right,
those items were, you know, all player sourced. And so that they would like people, they say, you know, they don't have to, but they would like it if you made it so that those items are transferable to your games if you make a game using Team Fortress 2's information.
Yeah, so this is really cool. This does not happen very often. Again, leading back
very
to
rarely.
Valve being just super cool. I also want to remind everyone, just, you know, Valve's not an angel. They're not a saint. You know, they're a company at the end of the day making
money. Evidenced by the stories that came out of possible workplace abuse by people make games.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's got its problems too, but especially compared to a lot of other areas in the industry as a whole, in how Valve treats consumers, people who play video games, they're up at the top, if
they're
not
nicer
at the
about
top.
It
so
yeah,
that's really cool for Team Fortress 2 people, because those people have not been getting fed. It's just that game has run its course. I think, yeah, it said later in this article, like, hey, the final comic on Team Fortress 2 is out. Like, I don't know what else you do with Team Fortress 2 at this point.
That's where they revealed that the scout is named Jeremy. And in an interview, they later confirmed that the scout is named Jeremy after the streamer Jerma, who is also named Jeremy. Looks a lot like the scout.
That's some good retconning. I like that. Yes, I'm all for it. Okay, that's funny. I was totally not on board. Like, his name is Scout. I don't know what are you talking about? But no, now that
they gave
it.
Everyone canonical names on the red and blue team.
That's funny. Okay, good. Well, we're gonna cap this off here with our good friends GameStop.
I'll say this one. Yeah. GameStop announces plans to sell off French and Canadian outlets while its CEO yells about wokeness and DEI in bizarre self-defeating promotion. So this story drives me fucking crazy. Okay.
Okay. I would love to hear why.
So there is a movement of people mm-hmm. that came in after the original 2021 stock explosion.
Right.
That GameStop went through that called themselves apes. And they believe in a conspiracy theory called MOAS, the mother of all short squeezes.
Okay.
And MOAS is GameStop's stock price surging to be infinity. Okay. And that the entire United States financial market will completely collapse surrounding the pricing of GameStop.
Okay, wait. So I'm already...
And they believe
yeah.
that the orchestrator of these events is one Ryan Cohen.
Oh, God.
So Ryan Cohen is... he's a financial guy. He sold, I believe it was Chewy, the dog food company.
Okay.
To become a billionaire. And he started Chewy by getting a bunch of his dad's money and then hiring a bunch of Amazon executives to move over to his company. And then they set money on fire until someone thought they were worth a bunch of money. And then they were purchased for like $2 billion, which is how he made his giga money.
God, never heard that one before.
Yeah, so he is this rich dude who just has made like a personal projects of trying to turn companies around and make them worth a ton of money. And he purchased a controlling stake in GameStop to become the CEO to do this for GameStop. The issue is that GameStop is a failing company.
Yeah.
It's not doing good by almost every metric. It's why it was so poorly evaluated. Mm-hmm. Now, the guy that made the original... prediction that GameStop would go up in value was right about why it would go up in value. He didn't say that it was a successful company. He was saying that it was an over shorted company, that people believed it was doing even worse than it was actually doing, which was true, which is why that short squeeze happened. It's because a bunch of major investors thought this company is about to go fucking bankrupt. And it wasn't about to go bankrupt. It just wasn't doing so hot.
And the future forecasts are not good for GameStop, like in terms of its
yeah,
business.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah.
And so this story is that, you know, they're selling off all of their French and Canadian outlets, which is part of the trend that they've been selling off a lot of their foreign outlets. Cohen said, buying GameStop Canada or Micromania France. Cohen added that high taxes, liberalism, socialism, progressivism, wokeness, and DEI included at no additional cost if you buy today. So infamously, these people worship Ryan Cohen. They believe him to be some sort of omnipresent, super-thinking megamind is leaving secret coded messages in all of his public statements.
Wait, he's Q? We have a new Q?
He's a Q. He's
Holy
Q.
Shit.
He's leaving secret coded messages in all of his public statements about what he plans to do with GameStop and Bed Bath & Beyond, a company he also holds a controlling stake in that has since filed for bankruptcy and sold off its assets. So what they believe that he's going to do to cause MOAS is he's going to announce that Bed Bath & Beyond and GameStop will be merging into a distribution-centric company that isn't about video games or home decor.
Okay.
It is instead about Amazon. It's Amazon. They're going to just be Amazon.
Okay, how are you gonna disrupt Amazon? We just had this conversation. How are you going to disrupt Amazon?
They're secretly poised. They have all the stuff secretly being built up, and they're going to announce it, bam, and they're going to be bigger, as big as Amazon, and their stock price will surge, and this will reveal that the stock price of GameStop and Bed Bath & Beyond has been shorted by more than the stock exists. This is something that can potentially happen and is generally the source of short squeezes as a financial incident, is when you short a stock and then someone else shorts the stock using the stock that you sold by shorting the stock. And so eventually more stock can be shorted than stock exists at all.
Mm-hmm.
So they believe that this has happened like, I don't know, like 10 times over with GameStop. and that if they simply buy GameStop and then wait for that to happen, that GameStop will surge in a valuation price, causing the short positions to become unprofitable, which is how short positions work. If it goes up, you lose money.
Right, right.
So they will lose money and then need to sell their short positions to get out of that. But you need stock when your short positions are executed. And you are contractually obligated to pay back the stock that you borrowed to make a short position exist.
Right.
Which means that because none of that stock will exist because apes bought all of it.
Did they buy stock all of them?
Will, they bought a bunch of it, and Ryan Cohen bought a bunch of it, and they're going to need to buy it to pay back the contracts that they're in. And they will need to raise the price until they have purchased it. And because apes will never sell,
right,
they hodl. They don't say hold. They hodl.
Yep.
They will hodl their stocks until the price continues to raise, because they will have to pay them whatever amount they demand, no matter what.
So this is like crypto-esque thinking.
Yes, there's a huge overlap with the crypto community. There's a strong correlation between being in crypto and conspiratorial thinking, and so a lot of these guys are crypto guys, and all of this comes from people who lost a ton of money. People who are apes are almost all people who purchased GameStop at the peak of its massive price spike.
Oh, no.
So they're in this because they ruined themselves financially, and they're holding on to their GameStop stock in hope that it'll be worth infinity money one day and that wasn't a bad decision.
Oh, man. And now there's this cult of personality that's happening with this.
Yeah. And they have a few messianic figures that exist in their movement, but it's a whole thing.
Oh, good. Oh, good. There's a whole GameStop-averse. That's great.
Yeah.
I linked this story because I wanted to talk about, man, used games didn't work out for them.
I thought we were still
operating on the, like, funding GameStop to fuck with the stock market, and no, we were still doing that.
They've pivoted their business model to being the center of a major financial conspiracy.
Right. And apparently that's working out for them, sort of, but not really.
It unironically is responsible for the current state of their stock price.
Yeah.
It's evidently much higher than their actual business prospects would result in evaluation-wise.
Yeah.
But people are buying a lot of the stock as part of this movement, and it's resulted in an inflated value.
I just want them to sell better gamer merch. That's all I'm looking for from a GameStop. If used games aren't profitable and you're selling used games, like, you just need better stuff. I don't want to go there and see like mainline T-shirts and Funko Pops.
I want to walk in there and be able to buy an old Pokemon game again. Remember when you could do that?
You could do that at one point. You could do that.
Now you can't do that anywhere.
Right. I know one old game store, and even then, it's like 20 NES cartridges, NES cartridges, and it's
you know,
all right.
Pokemon Black 2 costs?
Oh god, I don't. Okay, what?
$160.
God, generative AI. Come on, Xbox, you got this.
Yeah,
work with Nintendo. God. All right. Well, that's a show. Video games are insane. I don't know if you've noticed.
Video games are insane.
They are insane.
So is the world around them.
Yes, with GTA 6 is going to be so tame, I swear.
Yeah.
Damn.
Even set in Florida.
Right. No, just whatever. This is our life now.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for joining us for Super Game Craft Daily. If you want more video game and video game industry news, we are streaming and putting out episodes every weekday. So be sure to check us out on YouTube, on Twitch. We're on social media, Blue Sky, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Every day that you don't subscribe to our YouTube channel, you burn off small parts of my soul and spread them across the earth for me to be stuck on an eternal journey to recollect before I'm given the privilege of death.
You just got Dark Souls on the brain, huh?
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
a Dark
exactly.
Souls description right there. Shit. Life is Dark Souls. It's we've always known that.
Yep.
But yeah, so don't do that to Duncan. Please don't.
Don't trap me within this prison of life.
Like, subscribe. Keep us here on your little screen within your screen. Keep us in your podcast.
I'll live
apps.
Through your screen. Yeah. I will live in the screen, not in the world.
This is where we live now. Please don't shut us down. Please keep us in your earballs with Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Leaving a review there would also really help us out a lot in there. But hey, if this wasn't enough video game news for you, we're coming back tomorrow. So be on the lookout. So thank you all very much for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye.